Hi, everyone. So I'm going to talk to you about public health impact and epidemiology of coccidiomycosis in Arizona. So coccidiomycosis, also known as valley fever or cocci, is a fungal infection caused by inhalation of spores made airborne by disturbance of the soil. There's no person-to-person transmission, and as you can see from the map, it's primarily endemic to the southwestern United States, with highly endemic areas in central California and central and southern Arizona. There are an estimated 150,000 infections each year, and climate-related factors such as precipitation and dust storms may affect the growth and dispersal of the fungus. So, illness usually develops 7 to 28 days after exposure, and for most people, about 60%, they only have mild or no symptoms. However, 40% of people develop a pulmonary syndrome, which is like an influenza-like illness or a pneumonia that's indistinguishable from a bacterial or viral pneumonia. And so 5 to 10% of total cases develop a severe or chronic infection, and this often requires hospitalization and treatment. Symptoms can last from weeks to months or even years, but most healthy people recover on their own and are immune for life. So in rare cases, the infection can spread outside of the thoracic cavity, and this is a process known as dissemination. And it can spread to areas such as the bones, joints, skin, such as in this picture, and the CNS. And basically, the fungus can infect any part of the body. This dissemination is really severe and really does require treatment. People can present with this initially, or they can present with a pulmonary syndrome and develop this years later. So although anyone can develop severe disease, there are some risk factors for it. This includes Black or Filipino race, as well as potentially other races and ethnicities. Male sex, pregnancy, especially during the third trimester or immediately postpartum, diabetes, and any other any condition that can suppress cell-mediated immunity. So, in Arizona, coccidiomycosis has been reportable for years, and it's laboratory reportable since 1997. Two-thirds of all U.S. cases are actually reported in Arizona, and we mostly receive laboratory results, and we have a large volume of cases, about 5,000 to 6,000 each year, and we do not do investigations or medical record reviews of those cases for the most part, and we mostly don't receive any clinical information. So the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists case definition for cocci includes both clinical and laboratory criteria, whereas in Arizona, we only utilize laboratory criteria, and this is something we actually validated in an enhanced surveillance project in 2007, where we found that 95% of the interviewed cases actually met the clinical case definition. And since we receive such a large volume of cases, it really doesn't make sense to kind of search after those clinical signs and symptoms. And just to highlight the EIA, most of the laboratory results we do receive are EIA. It's about 60% of our total laboratory results that we're receiving. So since it became lab reportable in 1997, there's been a steady increase. And the causes of the total increase are unclear. It could be related to the climate, susceptible population, changes in testing, changes in reporting, public awareness, and increasing comorbidities. After 2008, you can see there's some major lab changes, so lab reporting practices as well as testing practices. So in mid-2009, one of our large commercial labs, which we'll call Lab A, began reporting isolated positive EIA results. They were confirming them before an immunodiffusion or other methods. So we had an immediate doubling of cases that year, and the mean age actually decreased, and the percent of females actually increased. And then in late 2012, the same commercial laboratory actually changed its EIA kit from the Meridian kit to the IMI kit, And then we saw an immediate decline in case reports, as well as the mean age increasing and percent females decreasing. So this led to concerns that there was some issues with false positivity on the EIA. So we're going to talk about the EIA now. For test performance, it really does vary by kit, what methodologies they're utilizing. So Lab A was using the Meridian kit, which had an automated and using an automated wash step, whereas other labs are using a manual wash step. So that can lead to some kind of some changes in sensitivity and specificity. And previous literature, there was some literature showing that it wasn't really specific in showing discrepant findings and methodological issues amongst the different studies. However, there have been some more recent studies that have been a little bit more helpful. So there was an EIA reproducibility study done. It's not published yet, but they found that 25% of positives at Laboratory A that were using the Meridian test kit were actually false positives, and it was mostly due to IgM false positivity. And they found that it also has a lower sensitivity than expected, which is around 70%. And they believe that was due to utilizing an automated wash step versus doing it manually. And then there was also a recent EIA study done by CDC where they found that 3% of healthy controls actually exhibited IgG reactivity. And this actually may reflect false positivity, asymptomatic infection, or past infection. So there have been a lot of changes in our numbers in recent years, which with the increase, California actually did also have an increase. So we don't think it was just due to some of our laboratory changes. We believe there was a true increase. And separately, hospitalizations in California and Arizona also increased from looking at our hospital discharge databases. And we also had a peak in 2011, which we think may have been possibly linked to summer dust storms, as well as prior precipitation in the previous year. And then most recently in 2014, we saw a decrease that was independent of any laboratory changes. However, this year, especially in the recent months, we've had an increase. So, you know, is it due to climatic factors? Because we had a lot of precipitation and dust storms. We don't know, but we're trying to look into it and see if we can find some answers to that. We also have no good explanation for the demographic shifts we saw with the laboratory changes. So is there potential that the immune response actually varies by sex? Is certain populations, are they seeking care, being screened? We're not entirely sure. We are trying to look into it and see if we can find some answers. So the impact of coccidiosis in Arizona is very significant. We have about 1,000 hospitalizations every year, and from 2003 to 2013, there were $950 million in charges. And this is most likely an underestimate because we're using discharge codes. And then from the enhanced surveillance project I mentioned earlier that we did in 2007, we interviewed every 10th case, and we found that they were ill for a median of 120 days. 75% missed school or work for a median of 14 days. 75% were unable to do daily activities for a median of 47 days. 44% went to an ER, and 25% saw a doctor more than 10 times. So it's pretty significant disease for those who do get it. It's very debilitating. And so we do want to, you know, continue to promote, you know, for doctors to test people and make sure that they get their status known so they can treat them if they do become more ill. So another thing we discovered in our 2007 study was that there were delays in diagnosis, which plays into what I was just talking about provider education. We found that the median time between first seeking health care and getting diagnosed is 23 days. And the median was 2 provider visits before being tested. However, we did find that you are more likely to be diagnosed and tested if you knew about COXI before you went in. So asking your provider, hey, can you test me for COXI, did seem to actually improve them being diagnosed. So some of the future directions we're looking for is looking at the burden of severe COXI and the risk among vulnerable populations. So looking at meningitis, looking at chronic infections, pregnancy. With chronic infections, we're trying to look at the lab reports and see people who keep getting reported over the years, and then try to look at those cases more in depth. And then we also are really interested in doing some climate modeling and looking at the role of dust storms, just because we think a lot of the increases that we can explain with lab changes are most likely due to environmental factors. And so we are working with some researchers to try to see if we can model precipitation events and dust storm events to see if there's any kind of association increases in cases. And then environmental testing to better define the range. CDC and TGen are doing studies of soil sampling and some air sampling potentially. And then the National Institutes of Health are having a randomized controlled trial to look at treatment for primary pulmonary coccidioidal infection to see if early treatment actually does affect outcomes. And that's all I have. Any questions? Sure, so a lot of it was from hearing about it from like TV. We did actually do two different things. We did a BRFSS questionnaire, and then we also asked them in the Enhanced Surveillance Project, and we compared those answers. But a lot of it was from, you know, either hearing it from a friend or like radio or TV. We try to do a lot of physician and public education campaigns. We have Valley Fever Awareness Week, which is actually coming up for us, and we do a lot of social media. We push out educational materials for our libraries and physicians, and we have radio PSAs. We really try to push to tell people, ask your provider to test you. And we've actually had, from the Enhanced Surveillance Project, we've had people call us and say, I asked my provider to test me, and they refuse. What do I do? So we try to help them and hook them up with our Valley Fever Center for Excellence in Tucson and have them talk to the experts there, because they're providers, to talk to their provider and say, here's what's, you know, tell us what's going on, what does your patient look like, and try to give them clinical expertise. And that's how we try to link some of those patients to care. So yeah, it is found in, you know, other regions of the world, in parts of South America, potentially Central America. It's difficult because we're basing a lot of it based on reported cases, because environmental testing is very difficult, and it would be pretty difficult to do it in certain areas. But that is one of the things actually the CDC is looking into, is kind of, is there a larger expansive geographical area where the fungus does actually exist in the soil? Sure. So, in certain areas, it's a lot easier to pull out occupations. So, you know, when you have people who come from non-endemic areas and do something very specific like archaeology or, you know, work on a solar farm in an endemic area, you will see an increased risk of getting disease. In Arizona, it's pretty ubiquitous in the environment. So we don't think there's really any specific risk factor you can look for occupation. Just being in Arizona, we consider as being at risk for getting the disease. And we don't believe it's ubiquitous necessarily in the soil. But again, it's very difficult to kind of say without doing a lot of environmental testing. But occupation-wise, we've looked into it in the past, and it's like, you know, from our enhanced surveillance projects, you know, the number one occupation is being like retired, for example, or, you know, people who are working indoors. So it's kind of hard to pull that information out. And there might be biases with seeking care, getting diagnosed for certain occupations. Yeah, that's what most people think. And like, you know, like I said, in some regions, that's definitely a lot more easy to parse out. But for us, you know, if they live, let's say, in an area that we know that it's in the soil, but they're working in, say, central Phoenix, where it's pretty urbanized and it's probably not in the soil, then it's kind of hard to parse out whether it was really the construction or them living in another area that makes any sense. Thank you.